Welcome to the Hospitality Maverick podcast with me, Michael Tinkser. We at Hospitality Mavericks are here to inspire leaders to create heart-centered and profitable businesses from the inside out, the kind that both employees and customers love and support. Thanks to BizSimply for sponsoring this episode as our show partner, and BizSimply is the all-in-one HR, workforce management, rotor operation software designed and built by hospitality experts to make every shift run like clockwork. And we join forces to help the industry find new ways to become even more innovative in how we lead our people, how we operate, to how we grow our businesses, to how we serve our customers. Together, we want to share strategies and tools that can make the industry thrive long term, not just survive.
I just hosted a women's event where I was the keynote speaker and I went completely rogue, but I didn't know in the crowd were three of our former employees. And all three of them individually, they talked about a time where I made an impact on their lives and how it got them to where they are now. I don't know, I didn't expect it. It was wild. And that's why I do this. It is not the financial fulfillment, it's the emotional gift that you can give.
This conversation had a real impact on me. It touched me and it moved me, because it made me feel something, and it underlines why I've had spent my whole life in hospitality, because it's about making people feel something. Today, we are taking a deep dive into hospitality innovation, culture, leadership with the incredible Ty Ritchie, partner at High Neighbor Hospitality Group. Our conversation spans for a wide array of topics that are critical not only to succeed of a hospitality business, but also to play the right role as a force for positive change in society or in your community. We explore what led Ty into the vibrant world of hospitality and the inspirational story behind founding High Neighbor Hospitality Group with two friends. We talk about what are the driving mission behind the restaurant group and the impact they're doing on communities and industry. And she reveals the core principles and strategies they have used to propel the group into success. We talk about culture crafting and how they are building a sustaining culture that supports their growth, innovation, and makes a positive impact on the community. Ty shares her lessons learned over the last couple of years as a business owner, where it's been really, really tough. And we especially zoom in on leadership and the strategies she has adapted. Prepare to be inspired, challenged, enlightened as Ty shares her wisdom, experience, and vision for a brighter future for the hospitality industry. If you want more insights on what Maverick leaders know and do, as well as more backstage info on the show, sign up for the weekly newsletter Maverick Talks, 5 minutes each week that could transform your leadership and business forever. Find a link in the show notes or visit hospitalitymavericks.com and sign up there. Now grab your notebook and coffee and get ready for some Maverick ideas and inspiration. Be Maverick. From the first time I got in contact, and actually I think it's quite a while ago, and then we've been trying to organize this interview, and then I think it was in January or was early February, we got a call and we start talking. It was very interesting after I got introduced to Ty and her journey into hospitality and what they were building in San Francisco. And I thought that, you know, the audience, the hospitality Maverick audience, you guys out there that is trying actually to build businesses, both for good, quite interesting to go on the journey with Ty to understand what they built and how they did it and what they learned from it and where they're going, because they are also trying to do something that's quite unique in a way in hospitality and have also had all the same pains as everybody else has had the last 5 years. And I can see she's nodding now. But enough about my setting the scene here. Let's welcome you to the show, Ty. And thank you so much for coming on the show and actually making sure we got here today, because it was you that followed up in the end and made the first conversation happen.
Thank you for having me. It is such an honor, you know, having listened to the podcast and seen all the people come through. When it did come in my inbox, I had to be like, are you sure me? So it's a really amazing opportunity. And I thank you very much for seeing me.
You're welcome. Because I think the reason why I'm very interested sometimes when people are doing something which I feel what I call this maverick, but also like, and there's really that, you know, thinking about what kind of impact is my business going to have beside it has to make a living, you know, and you truly are doing that on that journey. But could you give people a bit of it? Insight. I think let's start with your journey first, because I think that was one of the first thing I thought was really interesting when I dived in, was that this is not a restaurant person opening a restaurant. This is a person who comes from a whole different world, a more creative world, and very much in the audio space.
Yes. I born and raised in Philadelphia to the only daughter of divorced parents. And both of my parents, they worked. They worked two or three jobs just to keep food on the table, to keep me in school, to keep me in my dance classes, buy me a Lisa Frank book binder. I grew up on kind of the richer side of town where people didn't have divorced parents. Kids got everything that they wanted and we had nothing. So my parents were really conscious to give me as much as they could. That being said, I was alone a lot. So I played. I created characters. All of my stuffed animals had voices. I was different characters. And I just entertained myself. And so very early on, my mom, I think she knew as soon as I started to speak, she was like, oh, well, we have a handful right here. And just that I was always, anytime I saw another person and locked eyes, I was like, game on, we're performing now. And it was a nice break, you know, to not deal with being the only kid in school that didn't have a mom and a dad living together. But it was also a way that I really fulfilled myself because I didn't have a brother or a sister. You know, my parents were always working, but I always felt never alone. And that made a big difference to me. Restaurants were something I did because I needed to make money so I could also have nice things. And that's kind of how I got started. And I think restaurants for me were like little mini shows, right? So at my first job, I was at this little teeny tiny restaurant and I got the job because I came home and my mom had the newspaper on my bed and she circled all the jobs I could have, dry cleaner, babysitter, which I know. And one was a restaurant, and it was a restaurant my mom and I went on Friday night dates. And I knew everyone, they were very nice and the food was good. And I thought, oh, this is it. This is for me. I didn't really know what I was getting into, but I remember the first night very clearly. I was a bus girl. I was great. But each table was like a little mini show. Each interaction was different. You know, may I clear your plate? And someone said yes to me, that like filled me up because it opened the door for me to have a better interaction with people and really connect. So I'd be running around like the house was on fire, but I have 1,000 different stories going on in my head or in real life. And I got the nickname Chicken because my boss was like, you are like, I cannot contain you. You're insane. You're like a chicken without a head. I never know what you're doing or why, but everyone's so happy to be with you. Selfishly, restaurants fed me in a way that I didn't know it could. And it became addicting. It was like my side piece to my creativity. And when I wasn't working in restaurants, at certain points, I felt really empty. I think that's how I kind of got into hospitality. It is a drug. If you think about it, you go into work and you're nice to people and then they're nice to you back and you leave with money. Like my little teenage brain was like, how is not everyone wanting to do this job? It was insane to me. I felt so good after every shift and I liked money. You know, I could buy sunglasses and jeans and weed Like, and my mom never knew. It was fantastic.
Yeah. And how is that then connected to, you know, because so you got hospitality in the blood, like many else, the first job, and then you went on that creative journey. And I think that's really interesting. So you, in principle, you left the industry a little bit behind.
Yes. When in my time, people looked at restaurants and they were like, oh, what are you really doing? Oh, what's your real job? What's your real goal? Mm. And it used to break my heart, because why couldn't that be my job? I was young and I had all these older, amazing people around me, the bartenders, the managers, the hostesses, and they were thriving. And I really looked up to them, and it would drive me nuts when people would be like, what do you really do? And then to have my answer be, oh, I'm an actress. I mean, that was like so soul crushing. And you could see in their face, they're like, we're going to leave her a 22% tip. She's never going to make it. So at some point after being beat down so much, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to give up restaurants. I don't need this shit. Sorry. And I'm going. And so I got a scholarship to go to University of the Arts. I majored in theater and directing. And I thought I was going to be a stage actress, but it turns out I had to get a job again. And someone at the table said, oh my gosh, your voice, it's so neat and you're so sweet and I love your energy. You should meet my husband. He works at Random House. And I was like, okay, why would I do that? And she was like, he books on tape. And I was like, oh, what? I mean, at that point, they were still on CDs. And still came with, like, the cassettes. And I ended up failing miserably at acting and failing nothing, doing nothing with directing. But I started doing voiceover work really without any training, except for what the restaurants gave me, because I would picture the characters in my head as different people I had encountered in the restaurants. It was regulars or like this boss I hated or this crazy chef or this bartender that I loved. And that's how I really found my creative outlet and where I really succeeded. And then you get the taste, right? You're like, ooh, I can do this. What else can I do? And I think that it gave me the bravery to also embrace restaurants and say, I'm going to make it work because I'm making this work. And I was already told I could never do it.
And I guess you were quite successful with that, you know, the voiceover.
If you love tween novels about socks and pianos and crushes, yes. Yeah, I am. I found that when in LA, it was always the tween novels. I went up for some really good stuff against some really heavy hitters in the industry, and I obviously lost it. I remember one time I was up for a part Allison Janney was up for. I mean, like, I don't even know why I showed up. But I didn't get it. But then moving to San Francisco, the creativity became more. It blossomed because I did voicemails for big tech CEOs. I did the Guild Psalms wine training. I did how-to videos, like HR videos. So actually, you'd think I was more successful in LA, but San Francisco was really where I bloomed. And getting that success, like I said, it really gave me the confidence I needed to not be afraid to fail.
And that took you back into the restaurant world.
Yes, I wanted to, yeah.
Not just as an employee, but as a owner-operator.
Well, yeah, once... The confidence is key. Once I realized that I could do anything I wanted to do because I believed in myself, and I was obviously, of course, rewarded and fueled by my creative success, I was looking back kind of at my life and the people I encountered in the restaurant industry, and I realized that I wanted to make the restaurant a safe place and also give people a voice and support them in their dreams. I just didn't feel like I had that. in certain places, but I did know that I had it in others. And I wanted to give that back to people here. I mean, anywhere. If I can get a world voice to advocate for my coworkers, I will. Any opportunity I get to speak about it, I do. Because I don't just make things work. It's the same with recording books. Like, I don't just show up and talk and be crazy. It's a whole team of people. I'm not sure. Did I even answer the question? I just got so excited.
Yeah, because you were talking about here that you the question was that how did you actually transition back, you know, and then you came back into hospitality now with a different hat on this time, like a owner operator, and it was more about like what was that? How did you make that journey happen?
So I will say this: I had a boss, Audrey Claire Tashman, in Philadelphia, and she walked in the door. I mean, a force of nature. I've not met her yet. I was hired as a reservationist. She walked in the office door and it felt like the wind got knocked out of me. She was just this presence. And I thought, oh my God, women can own restaurants? That was completely foreign. Women can be bosses? Like, I thought that was just a man job. And we cleaned up after them and, you know, like made sure their tie looked nice and sent them off to work. So that sparked something in me when I was very young. I always knew I wanted something of my own because I wanted to influence someone one day the way that she influenced me. And I didn't work there long enough to really get to know her on an intimate level. There were some things that happened in that company that I knew I didn't want to, which was a great lesson. So I always kind of had this tiny fire in me that wanted to be part of a restaurant. Now, I thought owning a restaurant was glorious. I thought it meant I'd have a penthouse in the sky, not have to work, not deal with complaints, have no stress, give people candy and bonuses and be on my way. But I was wrong. But when I was able to start my own business creatively, you know, I knew that now I want something new. I want more, I want better, I want bigger. And I want to do it in a way that pays me back emotionally, because I knew financially I was always going to have a side gig. So that kind of sparked, that was where it lived inside of me.
And what did you create then? Talk a bit about what you created and you're still working on and where you are and...
Where you're looking to go.
Yeah.
Hi Neighbor is a partnership. There's three of us. It is myself, my best friend, Ryan, who used to be my boss in LA, who also tried to have me fired, but here we are. And then our friend that we met, Jason, who was the chef at Michael Mina. The three of us had all worked together. And then, you know, we obviously went our own ways. Everyone's doing their own thing. And then one day Ryan sat down and was like, hey, I think we should open a restaurant together. I know it's a little kooky crazy, but we should do it. And I remember being like, okay, should I text my boss that I quit? Because we're rich now. This is great. I love it. And Ryan was like, no, please don't do that. Like, we're months out. But we are really great friends that respect each other, but also call each other out. We scream at each other. We hang up on each other. I slam doors. But we always, in the moment where I just happened last night, I was yelling at Jason about something. And then he made a joke. And I was like, oh my God, that's so funny. But also like, really, dude, can you get it together? And da, 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 da. So we have a really good relationship. Honest. We always find the humor in things. And we genuinely like being with each other. And when we agreed to start this business, we agreed that it was like a marriage. Like, I'm not getting into this to ever get out of it. I am getting into this with you because we are going to do it forever. And we promise to stick by each other through the highs and the lows. And never once in the 10 years, it's 10 years in November, that we have been in business together, has anyone ever said, I'm out of here, or I'm going to buy your shares, or I have more than this. We've always treated each other as equals and we share the work. I think that's what sets us apart, because it's from the top down, right? Our team, we work on the floor every night. Someone is somewhere. Jason's cooking. Last night I was waiting tables. Tonight I'm going to wait tables with the team. So they see us and they see our interactions. And I think that makes a difference to them, because they see that we're like kind of silly, goofy, fun, and wildly inappropriate. But also when it gets real in the restaurant and we're in that crush, we show up. And we are also really honest about pivoting. You know, we had Corridor, which is a restaurant that we opened in 2015, and it was like the Titanic. I mean, we might as well have opened the doors and there should have been an iceberg right there. It was terrible. But we knew that it was terrible, and we listened to the feedback of the team and we listened to the feedback of our guests, and we pivoted and we stood up in front of everyone and we were like, hey, we messed up. This isn't working. We're not pivoting because it's not making us money. We're pivoting because we don't want to let you down. And I think that means a lot to the people that we work with. So that kind of is how High Neighbor does things. And we are a little kooky. We're a little nutty and weird. And I think that's refreshing to people. You know, Ryan doesn't show up in a suit. I'm never in a suit. I'm in yoga pants or hat if I'm not waiting tables or working the door or anything like that.
How many restaurants do you have to date then? Because 10 years, it seems like you build, and from you said before, one night, somebody's there, another night. It seems like you're more than one restaurant. That's it.
We have one open and closed, Stone's Throw, and currently operating, we have Trestle, the Vault Garden, the Vault Steakhouse, the Madrigal, Mama in Oakland, and the newly opened Seven Adams, which just got Michelin. Michelin acknowledged us after being open for 4 months. That was a big moment. You know, what is crazy, I've been working in restaurants my whole life. And I mean, I've worked at some amazing restaurants and I've gotten accolades all over the place prior to owning. And then we opened our first restaurant. People were like, you're so cute. Good luck, Ty. We opened our second restaurant, which was huge. Trestle, huge. It was the first of its kind to do anything like that. Huge accolades. People were still like, you're so sweet and cute. Then we started to gain traction in more and more restaurants. But with Seven Adams, second Michelin got attached to my name. I mean, people came out of the woodwork. And it was like, then I mattered. But I'm like, now I matter? How about 20 years ago? I'm doing the same thing that I was doing then. I'm waiting tables and bussing tables. And now I matter. It kind of made me realize who the people are that make the difference in the industry and who the ones that don't are. So it's time to cut some ties.
Why High Neighbor?
Why High Neighbor?
Yeah, Hospitality Group. Why that name? Did you start out with that name or did that evolve over time?
No. When we opened Stone's Throw, we opened it in a little neighborhood, Russian Hill in San Francisco, which like the trolley rolls by and you see the Golden Gate Bridge. And we named it Stone's Throw because it was Stone's Throw away, because we're your neighbor. It's a neighborhood restaurant. And I remember we were sitting down. We had just signed a lease to open Trestle. And Ryan was like, look, we got to like have a parent company because, you know, we all want to grow and succeed. And we were all sitting there and under the logo, which was two little birds, it just said, Hi, neighbor. And as soon as you opened the door, that's the first thing you saw. And we just looked and we were like, oh, hi, neighbor. Because one, we're a hospitality group. We're not a food-driven restaurant. While our food is outstanding, we are guest servicing first. And I feel like a lot of that comes from me. That's what I bring kind of to the group, because you can have the best food of your life, right? Like the best dish. But if your service is terrible or it's cold or something that ruins the experience, you're going to leave thinking about that. You could also have a mediocre dish, but if you walk out because someone made you feel good, you will come back for that experience, because that is what is addicting. And that, like, I talk about this a lot too, which everyone needs to remember. Like, you know, at some point we've all had a real shit day, right? Like, just catastrophic in our brains. And we went somewhere and someone at some place, it could be the grocery store, it could be a restaurant, it could be anywhere, the toll taker on the bridge, was just nice to you. And it changed your day.
Mm.
And that is what I strive for. I think that's what High Neighbor strives for every day in our interactions with people. It's really, because, like, why wouldn't I want to make you feel good if I'm going to feel good? And it costs me nothing. It costs me nothing. So, High Neighbor is hospitality. But also, we didn't want to be such a serious food restaurant either, because we wanted to branch out. You know, Ryan is amazing at finance. We consult for restaurants on openings. We do their books. We do their hiring, their HR, like their food consulting. I consult for events. We're basically saying, hi, we're here, we're your neighbor, and we'll help you. We never wish ill on anyone. Jealousy's never even, like, come up, because we try and integrate yourself into the community. Not lead the community, but be a part of.
I love to work with the team over at BizSimple because they are always striving to get better. 1% better every day. So I had to share this with you, because BizSimple have launched a new blogcast which highlights some of their favorite hospitality maverick podcast episodes over time. And if you're new or a hardcore super fan of the show, this is a perfect opportunity to catch up with some of the standout episodes from our massive back catalog. The BizSimple team has and will be extensively transcribing interesting moments from each episode while providing some new insights on our brilliant guest, the Mavericks. There's already some great write-ups with Mavericks like Chef Chantel Nicholson and the co-founder of Singerman's Community of Businesses, Ari Weinschwein. Find them at bizsimple.com/blog and click blogcast on the right side menu. Enjoy.
It's very interesting the way you talk about it. I don't know if you never, there's another business in the US called Singerman's. And I think I mentioned them to you.
You did, on the air.
Yeah. And that's, it's also, they are in food, but actually about how you make people feel and how well you serve the community. That's like the leading mission. That's how I read it and how I understand it. Maybe Ari would say something different. And they just bring that to life in different formats of concepts. And now you talked about there's other revenue stream than restaurants. There's also like consultancy and helping others getting started, yeah, and get off the ground. But what is the mission? Because you said you started with one restaurant, which felt like that's we're gonna do what we want to do, and it's gonna be nice. We're gonna make a reasonable living out of it. But now you've gone on this journey of getting multiple restaurants and probably more in the pipeline and ideas you want to.
Yes, go and there do. Are.
That's
why?
What happens when you get to one level, you want to get to the next level. That's human. But what is the mission? What is the, how it's going to look? You know, how it's going to unfold?
I can only speak for myself as one of the three High Neighbor representatives. For me, it wasn't about the money ever. I'll find a job that will pay me. For hospitality, the restaurants, it was about building a community of people that I wanted to be around every single day, who reflected my feelings and my beliefs and my values. And I know my passion for that community outreach and for giving people a platform and for protecting those close to me. So once we did the first one and everyone really responded to it well, because there's a lot of PTSD of people being mistreated. You know, we've all heard the stories. I personally have been through it. I don't know anyone that hasn't. I saw that I made a difference, and that fulfilled me in a way that financially I knew was never going to. And I got addicted to it. I am addicted to it. I feel like I don't have kids, but I feel like it, people that have four kids, I'm like, what are you thinking? That's crazy. And they're like, oh, because you love that love back. You want to give people the opportunity to truly succeed. And I want to show my team what I see in them. That's why I do it. And that's why we continue to grow. Because if we can grow more, the message can get out there more that this is an industry where you can be happy and you can be taken care of and you can be proud to work in. And I want to set an example. You know, it's very important. And I have to do it by not being like, here's my one restaurant. Here are my six restaurants that run the same way and treat everyone equally. And here are, you know, 40% of our team have been with us since Stone's Throw. Which 40
10 years then, yeah.
Yeah. We've had six high neighbor babies. Three people have met at our restaurants and gotten married. I married one of them. No, that's wrong. I was the officiant of their wedding. I didn't marry an employee. We've had people grow and start their own businesses. We've when the pandemic happened, we started an incubator series. So we just reached out to everyone and said, hey, we have this PPP money. The restaurant is closed. If you have a restaurant that you are dreaming that you want to have one day, we will pay you through this money to have a pop-up at one of the restaurants. But here's the deal. You work alone, you make all the food, you make all the menus. We taught them how to do their finances. We taught them how to work with InDesign for menus, how to set up an Uber Eats account, how to and we called it the incubator series, and we rotated chefs through it and gave everyone a chance. For me, I want to give back because, you know, being this only child that was probably bratty and headstrong, a lot of people took their time to give me something, and I want to pay that forward. And I hope that my team will pay that forward to someone else.
So there's a principle, no finish line. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, no finish line. Absolutely not. I'm going to keep going until I physically cannot.
So you just mentioned something really interesting is that, you know, over 10 years was 40% of the people you hired are still there. That says something about culture often to me, because in an industry where probably turnover is approaching 100% now a year, if not more for some, how do you actually build that culture? What do you think the secret is to the culture you build up? What is your algorithm? I think there's not one secret. There's probably a number of ingredients that come together.
Yeah. You know, my partner, Ryan, is probably the most morally sound human I've ever met in my life. And so we have that going for us. I personally believe building the culture is about building trust. And you don't build trust just by hiring someone and giving them a paycheck. You build trust because you are in the restaurants every day. You know their first and last name. Oh my God. Our GMs, every time they start, it's like you cannot fly solo until you can list every single person's first and last name in this entire restaurant. Number one, so your respect. So you build trust there. And then it's about asking questions, right? Where are you from? What's your mother's name? Where do they live? Do you have kids? Are you in love? Would you like to bring your partner in? Or do you have any allergies? Just honestly, just general questions that I would want to know from my friends. And you make investments in people by knowing what their goals are, things that they like or don't like. Like, oh, are you unhappy at your job? Well, tell me why. Well, what's your goal? Oh, you're a steward now, but you actually want to be a chef. Well, let's get you out of the steward position and get you into prep. And let's have you follow chef around one day, morning till night, so you can see maybe being a chef is not what you actually want. That is how we do it. And we ask the right questions. Recently, I had someone came to me and they were like, I need a raise. Sure, I'm never great, but I started wondering why. What's $2? how is that going to impact your life? And what other way can I actually make an impact in your life? And it turns out that they had this daycare that they wanted to send their child to, but it was $3,000 a month and they didn't have $3,000. And I said, hey, I'll give you the raise, sure, but that's not going to get you the $3,000 a month. Why don't I just give you the $3,000? And here's the deal. This is how you're going to pay me back. You cannot call out. You cannot no show. None of that horseplay. Like, let's work together. And then I said, you know, if this is going to take something off your plate, what is it you want to do? How do you want to further yourself? So it's really, it's just knowing what makes the wheel turn in everyone. And it is exhausting. Sometimes the disappointment, it sets me back for days, you know, but I'm not afraid to break my own heart. That has been my rule from day one.
But it's interesting. It's like almost like you'll be people listening and I was thinking as well, how do you scale that? Because it really, it must, as you say, it's a toll. It's hard work, you know. And that's also why most don't do it, I guess, because they there must be a simpler way. They think, we'll do it with policies and procedures. But I actually very much believe in what you're saying. And I talked with somebody else the other day that very successful build a hotel business on exactly that, where there was not, because I asked, so what is your people strategy? You know, there's no people. The people strategy is that I have to go and do this work. And then my leaders see I do that work and they will go and do the same work. And then the ripple effect comes because the quality of the questions we ask.
How do I do it? Look, I think there's obviously some part of me that is emotionally damaged somewhere, as we all are. So I'm willing to take the abuse because it doesn't faze me, right? Like, I have taken that part, put it in a little box. It lives here. I know it's here. It's fine. I think the thing that helps me survive the setbacks and have the patience and not lose my mind every time someone disappoints me is my theater training. It's that yes and mentality. And it is the reason I survive. You know, there's a dinosaur over there. The building is on fire. Your mom is here. She needs to see you right now. And I would be like, okay, great. So let's just do it. You know, so instead of taking the disappointment personally, I say, okay, I accept that. And now what is next? How can we make it better? How do I move on? You just keep the ball rolling. I try not to stew in the disappointment, like a bad Yelp review or an email about someone having the worst time. Like, that could actually break me. It could probably break a number of people, but I don't let it. Because there's a deeper reason as to why someone is doing what they're doing or saying what they're saying. And I know that it's not me. So you got to kind of not take it too personally and just keep going. And that's how I do it. That may not work for everyone, but I just like to keep going.
What do you think that, you know, the people that has been with you or the people with you now make them feel that you are like this special place you're trying to create? What have you heard people say? Do you know what they are saying from an employee's point of view as well?
For High Neighbor, when we opened Stone's Throw, we allowed everyone to invest in the next restaurant. And it was any amount. Some people invested $500. Some people came out of the woodwork with, oh, here's my $20,000. I was like, you have $20,000? I have like $1,600 in my bank account. How do you have $20,000? And then it was, then you become an investor in the next restaurant. And then you can invest in the next restaurant. So we make people feel like they're part of something.
And that's the employees that's allowed to invest in the business, just to clarify, yeah?
Yes. Yeah. And when we did Trestle, we started with the employee investment first, and then we opened it up to the original investors. Because it was really important to us. And, you know, we have one person on the team, Fernando, who invested money in Trestle. And then as his investment grew with High Neighbor, he gave it over to his son. And that was what his legacy was. And now his son works with us. And I remember him like he was a tiny baby when I met him. You know, so learning how to handle finances, which is something I don't know that they're going to teach this kid in high school. So that is a big thing. Everyone has access to us all the time, which is a blessing and a curse. I thank God my phone is off, because I couldn't tell you the text messages I probably would have right now. We're always in the restaurants. Everyone has my cell phone number. They can reach out to me anytime. I think that makes a big difference. I will take time out of my day to always listen, to always give feedback to, and have a good dialogue is important. And I just hosted a women's event where I was the keynote speaker, and I went completely rogue. I had a whole speech planned, and then I had two glasses of wine. I was like, you know what? I'm going to just talk. Stop me at 5 minutes. But I didn't know in the crowd were three of our former employees. And they had did a Q&A afterwards, which was awesome. And all three of them individually had a very lovely question, but also said they talked about a time where I made an impact on their lives and how it got them to where they are now. Or for my girlfriend, Caitlin, like, made her feel like she could do anything. I don't know. I didn't expect it. It was wild. And that, like, that's why I do this. It is not the financial fulfillment. It's the emotional gift that you can give.
But that's quite interesting, because you saw your former boss walking in the door, and now you have achieved that, I guess, at some from a personal.
I don't know. Maybe. Sorry. I'm so sorry. Yeah, you know, maybe I have, but I also have this thing where, like, I don't like to maybe acknowledge or celebrate my successes. But maybe, I mean, you're right. Maybe I did become her.
And now you can set the next goal, but it's really interesting, because, again, you already touched some people. You touched really a lot of people, I guess, on that journey. And as you're developing this restaurant business, and you create all these, you know, people that goes away, and they have this impact to their life in a positive way, to go run their own businesses and so on. How did that actually, you know, do you then feel that actually that's the business, the soul of the business is alive? I'm thinking my question is, do you feel that you have actually maybe already achieved what you set out to do, but there's so much else to be done?
Yes. 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 That's it. Yes. Yes. I do feel that. You know, it is what I spoke about earlier, that adrenaline, that addicting adrenaline of, like, you know, not thinking you were ever going to make it. And then I made it as a successful voice actor. And I was like, ooh, I taste that. That feels good. Well, let's see what else I can do. Oh, restaurants. I personally think one of the hardest industries to be in, that is emotionally and mentally draining. And we succeeded. And I was like, oh, here's that feeling, like a little power inside of me. And then we got to a point where I had concrete evidence that we were doing well and could do things. And I thought, what else do I have inside of me that I want to accomplish? What other challenge can I take on? And how can I show people that success doesn't actually have to be as hard as everyone makes it out to be? So, you know, that's when we took on outsourcing the three of our abilities. Like, we already have six restaurants, and we are working on other people's restaurants too. But if my legacy is that you actually can do anything you want, then that's what I want. You know, I don't want, she did a great job for Meals on Wheels, which is my favorite charity that I love. I don't need that etched in stone. I want to know that when I'm gone, 100 people have achieved what they want to do because they saw me do it. That's what I want.
That's super interesting. Super interesting. Very inspiring. As a leader of a business owner, it's been, you know, a period of lots of transformation in the industry, still more to come. What has been the most significant learning for you, Ty, over the last couple of years as a business owner?
Oh my gosh. Learning how to eat a bunch of humble pie. Yeah.
Say a bit more about that.
You know, when you do get that taste of power that I was talking about, that delicious little slice, it can sometimes make you a monster. And I think I became one for a minute because, I mean, imagine you invest in all these people and they love everything that you're saying and they do anything that you ask, you become like a tyrant. I wasn't consciously doing it, but it opened up something inside of me that I had never experienced before. Therefore, I had no control and I had no tools to manage it. And then COVID happened and it knocked the wind out of everyone. And COVID wasn't what taught me the lesson. It was having time to talk to my team from being that kind of monster on the hill to now having to check my ego and myself and relate to people. And it's like coming back in full circle, relate to them on a different level. That was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do. I think apologies are incredibly hard. I think owning your faults is hard. It's hard to do it when you sit by yourself. It's incredibly hard to do it when you sit with someone that you love, you know? And I learned that I had to know that my way wasn't always the best way, that their points of view were also valid. And I had to learn how to look someone in the eye and actually own my wrongdoings and apologize for it and mean it. An apology is a very easy thing to just say, I'm sorry, but you have to sit in it with someone else and you have to listen. So it taught me how to really, really listen. Not to me, I can listen to me all day, but to listen and receive how I affect someone else.
Yeah.
That is my biggest lesson.
Well, and you know, ego is the enemy. The Stoic philosophers are saying, Ryan Holiday wrote a whole book, and I think I shared that with the audience in the newsletter at some point, because we all have egos, no matter what. Just about how we counterbalance them all the time, and it's also often when we get scared, it's because the ego is starting to take over. We get angry, it's also the ego because of something I haven't been given, I should have, I deserve. In a way, you have that little monster talking in your head.
Yeah, like a little.
They should have done.
And
that's the ego talking, and I know it's so hard, and especially when you have success. It's very hard to eat humble pies, as you said, very much, because we often forget the journey there, and actually, success don't last forever. It will one day it will crumble, and you have to build it again in some kind of way. And I'm not saying that's always, but you have to go on a journey again. It might not be the business, but it's maybe be you to struggle with something.
You brought up a really good point just now. Insecurity in the ego. I think for me, because I was younger when we started this, people would ask me questions like, I didn't go to business school, right? I didn't make an Excel spreadsheet, honestly, until like 3 years ago. And all I can still do is make the lines darker on the outside of the boxes. I mean, I am terrible. But I thought becoming a restaurant owner meant I just knew everything. I didn't know how to do everything. I didn't know the ins and outs of all this stuff. So people would ask me questions and my insecurity would make me crazy because I didn't want to expose that I didn't know the answer, that I wasn't the full boss. But Ryan does finances. I could never do what Ryan does. Jason is the chef. I could never do what Jason does. I learned how to do what I do very well, which is be the heart and be the leader. And I carved out my space to do that. So, and I realized that, after I had to eat my humble pies, like I'm not meant to do everything in this industry. I'm not meant to do HR. I for sure know that, but I am meant to do what I am doing. And I worked my way to get to there so that I can be the successful part of that extension of the restaurant.
Mm. And that's quite interesting as well when you have a partnership where, in principle, the things coming together becomes rocket fuel, you know, and there has to be some people or individual to integrate the vision into the business, and then there has to be the visionary and the dreamers that sets the incredible high standards. That's almost like, well, that's not realistic, but let's meet here so we can get everybody can get satisfied, so we get the best possible outcome. And that conflict you talked about, conflict between that group or the two individuals, are really, really important in any business to have. And I think any great business have that ability. And often I have met that one person that consists all of that. So you need that. If you don't have that, you either need to employ them or you need to
co-find somebody. That's exactly it.
So I think it's very important you talk about that, because often I think lots of people on the journey alone as entrepreneurs, and also especially in food and hospitality, which is the top of the industry. So I've heard, and that's what normal people say. It's not saying that other industries are not, everything is hard, everything needs grit. But it's like it never sleeps, as I say, because it's food and people.
I love that. Life.
Yeah.
I'm writing that down.
A couple more questions before we tie up here, Ty, because it's such an interesting conversation. What would be your, like, on your LinkedIn profile? I want to ask two questions. This one, on your LinkedIn profile, I found, and maybe it doesn't mean that much, but I guess it means something. Giving you what you don't even know you want yet. Why do you have that on your LinkedIn profile?
I was waitressing at the time here in San Francisco, and I was scrolling online, and this quote popped up. The actual quote is, "You're not supposed to give people what they want. You're supposed to give them what they don't know they want yet." And it was Diana Freeland, who I think was an editor and chief of Vogue magazine, which has nothing to do with the industry. And she passed away in 89. So a while ago, it just struck a chord in me. Right? It said to me, like, I am the curator of your experience. And when you are at my tables or in my home, so give me the menus. Don't think about a thing. Tell me what, if you have any allergies, and I'll bring you food, because I know the menu better than you do. And that's always been my philosophy. So then people started coming to the restaurants, and they wouldn't even get a menu. It would be, choose what I'm eating, pick my drinks, and they would bring more people in, and those people would bring these people in. Because what's the whole point of dining out? It's not to interrupt the conversation to decide, you know, do I want the squid ink conchile or the burrata? I just want to be like, hi, I'm here. I'm going to give you my money and I trust you. Just don't bother me for the next 2 hours, because I want to be with my friends and family. I think that's my superpower, is my ability to read guests, because I have been doing this for so long, and I've been through so many changes of styles of dining and food coming out and all that kind of stuff. I can just ask you a few questions, and then I know. And I know what I'm going to bring you, whatever it is. I believe in it 100%. So you will too. And there's been absolute times where someone's like, this is garbage. I'm like, that's amazing. Now give me the chance to recover. And I do. And then, you know, you build that trust again. In 2012, I don't know if you guys have it. We have Eater. So the Eater San Francisco, Eater LA. It's like kind of like the kind of gossipy little tabs for restaurant industry things, new openings, closing, scandal. In 2012, a woman who I used to do that for, who would bring her friends and family into the restaurant, wrote to them. It was like, I got to tell you, this has never happened to me before. And I love it. And I'm addicted to it. And Eater made me server of the year in 2012, which is actually not a real award. And my team loves, they will, if you interview anyone, they'll be like, oh, when Ty won that award in 1906, like, they do not cut me any slack at all. But it was based on that. It was me saying, like, I already know better. You're in my house. Let me give you the best of what I have to offer. That's kind of what that quote means to me. And it's not just applicable to restaurants. It's applicable to everything, you know, to my friends, to my car dealer. Like, you seem to have an off day. Let me bring you a little snacky or something. I don't know. Just how magical. It's like sorcery to have that kind of a gift. And not everyone has it or can do it. But it just, I remember I was in an alleyway smoking a Marlboro Ultralight after one of my shifts. And that quote came up and I just knew. That's me.
That's very interesting. It's really, and you live by it. I don't think that's really, yeah, really interesting. I don't think most people has, when they have a quote, they have like a very deep story. And that was why I wanted to say, what is actually the story behind this? And how is it actually tied into what you do? And it's very much tied into what you do. And I love that. What is the one advice you would give to other leaders out there that's trying to build a business as a force for good, Ty?
Believe in yourself. Before you take your business plan or your idea to anyone, when you step foot, when that foot hits the pavement outside of your door, you believe 100% in yourself and that you will not fail. You have to walk in with confidence in anything that you do. If you don't, and this is very important too, if you don't love what you are doing, this industry, a mechanic, anything, if you don't love it, it will chew you up and it will spit your bones out and you will never recover. But if you love what you are doing, it takes so much out of the way and it allows you to have the confidence and grow that confidence because you know that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. That, believe in yourself. You are everything that you need. And you're also, at the end of the day, you're inside your head. It's just you. You got you. It's like, make it count.
Yeah, and that's the most important thing is like how you manage that inside your head, because you can't control it, but you can definitely manage it.
Yeah, be kind. Be kind to yourself.
What is the one question you wished I'd asked you? What would that question be and why?
Okay, this question, thank you for it, because it is also often overlooked. I wish that you had asked me who my favorite boss was and why. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And may I tell you? Okay, mm-hmm. I love him. His name is Mark Domkoski. He was my general manager at Alma de Cuba, which was a hybrid of Steven Starr and Douglas Rodriguez in Philadelphia. And I was a hostess. I wanted to be a server. I mean, I bullied this guy. I tormented him. Make me this. I want to be a server. Da, 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 da. And he just was always so kind and always gave me his time and never eye rolled. There was lots of like laughter. He also had four daughters at home and a wife and a dog. Like, I can only imagine this poor guy coming into work thinking he's going to get some reprieve. And I'm like, hi, hello, Mark. But he was very patient. He said to me, and I wrote it down, as I started to grow our restaurant, I wrote him and I just said, you know, I don't know that I would ever be here without you. And he responded and said, you can only commit to the level you are able to work at and hold everyone to those standards. You can't force it. And I don't know if that's a quote from somewhere that he very graciously gave me, but it changed me and it made me appreciate him. And, you know, not everyone in management understands the force of nature that they are and how they impact someone's lives. And maybe they don't even know it. And I don't know that Mark had any idea what I was going to do. or, you know, that I even was ever a thought in his mind after I left the restaurant, but he was always in mine. And you just have to be hyper aware that every move you make can matter to someone and how is it going to impact them. And he was just a good man. He was a good boss and he taught me how to be a good boss.
Now, that was a very, very good answer to that question. And actually sometimes we forget where we got inspired from and we all have that person that gave us that, you know, confidence. If you think back, and I think anyone I've talked about with this before could get be very clear about that specific moment and what was said. It's so clear to you because that was one somebody believed in you. And that was actually, and that's what we actually all need sometimes. People believe in you. And that can be with, you know, encouraging words. It can be with their time. It can be with their money, whatever it is. So you can go and do the thing that you are best at doing and find your standard, because it's very interesting. And I think you would, I've heard that before and similar. So I was thinking Danny Meyer or Michael Jordan. That was what I was thinking when I was listening to that. But I'm not sure which of them, or it's a combination of them. Because Michael Jordan is very aggressive on standards, that's for sure. Yeah. And Danny Meyer is also definitely a standards man, but also that it's my job to take you to those standards. That's
yes.
Why I set that standard. It's my job to take you there. Where can people connect with you if they want to hear more about what you're doing in high?
I think the best would probably be my Instagram. Which is Tyrici, and there's only one of me in the entire world. So I pop right up when you search. I would let everyone know that I'm a little unhinged and I say what I want and I do what I want, but you also will hear about the restaurants there. I'm on LinkedIn as well. I'm not as active as I should be, but that is my 2024 goal. So maybe we can all hold me accountable. That'd be great. Send me a message. And then High Neighbor website, High Neighbor SF. That is, give you access to all of us, my partners, our company, how we're growing, and job opportunities or opportunities to connect for coffee or a Zoom.
Great. Great, Ty. Thank you very much. We put all that in the show notes. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you
for sharing your lovely journey and, you know, really, really sharing what had deeply touched you. And thank you for giving that. I think that's a very big thing to give. We send you, or I send you and the team at High Neighbor Hospitality Group, all the power and energy and love you need to continue this journey and keep on making a beautiful impact on our beloved industry.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate that you're listening in. So if you enjoyed today's conversation, please share with others, rate it or give it a review, or subscribe to one of our channels, which all can be done via the website hospitalitymavericks.com. I believe that reading books is key to become a great leader. So I helped you with a curated list of some of the books that have impacted the guests here on the show and myself over the years. Find it on Hospitality Mavericks website, hospitalitymavericks.com, under the reading list. A big thank you to BizSimply for supporting us, bringing great insights, strategies and tools to help leaders to become better every day. Check them out at bizsimply.com, on their social at bizsimply or bizsimplyhq. You can also email them directly at podcast@bizsimply.com. If you have any ideas and feedback for the show or other thoughts, reach out to me via LinkedIn or my email, michael@hospitalitymavericks.com. I'm Michael Tingsher, and you've been listening to the Hospitality Maverick podcast show. Be Maverick.